everyone to Art of Advisory. I'm your co-host, Hector Garcia, and I'm with Kirk Bowman. Hey, Kirk, how are you?
I'm good, Hector.
So what do you want to talk about today, Kirk?
You know, one thing I've been thinking about lately is how do we use social media, particularly social media in business? The way this came up is I was beginning to contemplate how I use social media, in this case, one particular platform, Facebook. And really thinking about, okay, do I want to continue to use it kind of for personal connections, or do I want to start using it for business, or do I want to use it for both? And it just made me realize that there's not necessarily a wrong way to use social media. The biggest mistake we can make is not having a strategy. And that's really what I was doing, was kind of contemplating my strategy and do I want to change? So I'd love to hear your initial thoughts on this.
My initial thought is maybe you have, okay, so I'm going to tell you both sides of the spectrum on the way I see it. One side of the spectrum is you have absolutely no strategy. You're out there, creating, sharing, talking to people, chatting, getting into long, pointless political discussions, whatever, right? Whatever people are doing on social media nowadays. And then hope that maybe you get some outcome from it. Now, it is possible that by accident, this can happen. That is possible. However, I believe it's highly unlikely that whatever the result you will get from using a random social media strategy will be hardly predictable. So it would be a totally surprise outcome. Now, in some cases, that outcome could be a good thing. In some cases, Maybe it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it wasn't giving you your return on investment per se. So what you're saying, Kirk, I think is absolutely right. So maybe we should discuss, I would say between both of our perspectives, what exactly does that strategy look like, or what how do you think about social media before you get in it? And the first thing I can think of is, you know, what sort of people I'm looking to attract so that I can do something with those connections. I would say that would be the first general rule. I would say that's the first thing you want to do. What sort of people do I want to attract? You know, when I say attract, means to watch or to follow your work or your postings, to then later on leverage those followers and connections to do some business, whatever that business may be. What do you think that as a first general rule?
I think you're right. You're essentially saying begin with the end in mind. And you're also, you know, making an assumption that I want to point out, which is you're going to specifically use it for business. So yes, social media is a marketing channel, especially when you're using it for business purposes. So as I said earlier, first decide on your strategy. You've already made a couple decisions. You have decided, I'm going to use it for business. And you've decided, or I would say in this case, recognized it is a marketing avenue. And so I'm going to begin with the end in mind. And I'm going to think about, okay, when I make these connections, how are those connections eventually going to translate into business? Not that you're trying to sell directly, but you are thinking about how is the content I'm going to share? And that really is what I think social media is when you start looking at it for business purposes, particularly marketing. It's content. It's micro content. How is what you're going to share translate into leads, which could then translate into business? In other words, social media is kind of the tip of the funnel or the top of the funnel, if you think about it that way. What's your reaction?
Yeah, one thing I'll tell you is there may be an internal mindset change that you may have to do temporarily in order to keep your eye on the price. And this is going to sound counterintuitive. So you're saying that this is a marketing strategy, okay? And if you call anything marketing, it's because the end in mind is we're going to get customers from it. That's essentially what marketing is, right? It's either brand awareness or actually get clients. So I'm actually going to tell you the opposite. I'm going to tell you while you need to acknowledge that social media ultimately is for marketing and ultimately is to attract customers, what I would recommend in order to have a real strong execution of your strategy, and assuming that your strategy is attract people's attention, because we said that at the beginning, what sort of people do we want to attract and create connections with, so later on we can leverage those relationships and turn them into business. But if you're focused on just attracting the people, I believe that if everything you do has a marketing agenda behind it, you will lose track of that result that you want, although it's counterintuitive because the result is to get clients. The problem is that generally speaking, when you are attracting people, you need to add value up front. And it's very difficult, not impossible, but it's very difficult to add value up front without an agenda which has in its forefront a message of a sale. So it's that delicate line between having a strategy, acknowledging that this is a marketing tool, acknowledging that the purpose of this is truly to have clients at the end. However, take all that stuff and park it so you can focus on just creating high quality content that will drive traffic. So I say that's kind of the first mindset that you may have to change. And I don't think this will work for every single person. I mean, any marketing person, marketing strategist will tell me that I'm full of crap, right? Because, you know, that doesn't sound like a good strategy. The good strategy for marketing people is to think about the strategy of marketing the entire time. But in my personal opinion, I'm not a marketing strategist and I'm not a marketing expert. My expertise, which is what clients buy from me, it's my knowledge and experience with accounting systems, my knowledge and experience with running small businesses. So if I am focused on marketing and not focused on showing what I can do for you, the message will get muddled. So I forget about, so I know there's a marketing strategy, and it's somewhere in the back of my head. But every single day that I create content and I do podcasts, webinars, videos, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, all I'm thinking about at that moment is I got something interesting to share. I believe strongly that someone will drive some benefit or value from it. Therefore, it's going to add to the goodwill of my personal brand, of my business brand. And it's going to create a follower, a person that says, you have my attention, and just know that in the long run, that will turn to business. Your followers may buy something from you, or your followers will share with someone that will eventually buy from you. But the only reason why anyone would share your content is because they think that it adds value to someone else. So before you think about the ultimate user of that value, you have to give at least a partial value or immediate value to at least your follower. Because remember, the concept of social media is the network effect. It's not just the people that you are attached to, the people that follow you. It's the people that follow them and so forth. I don't know what book said that, but it's like a famous axiom or a famous thing that says that everybody's connected to each other with 7 degrees or something like that. Kirk, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, 5 degrees. You typically hear it referred to 5 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon. At least there was a movie that the characters were discussing how, you know, if you follow the connections in your network, you're only 5 people or 5 degrees in your network away from a specific celebrity such as Kevin Bacon.
I Googled it. It's 6 degrees of separation. So if you were to believe, if you were to believe that to be true, okay, that every single person is connected to each other within 6 degrees, and 6 degrees would be 6 layers of connectivity, and you believe you have a good product and a good service, and the clients are out there, social media or a social network is the best strategy to go about reaching those people. The key is that your buyers may not be your first degree, may not be your second degree, may not be your third degree. Your buyer could be in that 6 degree. So your strategy has to somehow cut through all these degrees to get to your ultimate customer. And the only way to do that is by adding value up front. Now, there's a quick video on YouTube by Gary Vaynerchuk, which is probably the most famous social media consultant at the moment. And he takes phone calls from the general public, and they asked him, why do you give up all your best stuff for free? Why do you give up all your advice for free? Why do you give up the best strategies for free? And his answer, which is a famous answer, says, there's two reasons, right? One is ideas without execution are worth nothing. And two, 99.9% of people will not execute on them. But somehow I become famous and revered and respected because I'm giving away this value up front. So it's just kind of a really interesting approach. It says that you can give it away for free. You can give all your ideas for free. You can give all your solutions for free, your advice, your strategy, give all that stuff for free. But people are not going to execute on it. So you don't have to worry about the giving away your know-how or being scared that was your secret sauce, and without that, you really have nothing. And in our industry specifically, on the advisory industry, I mean, how can someone trust that you will give good advice if you at least don't have good advice to give in social media, for example? What do you think about that?
Well, I think we're saying similar things. We're just doing it in different ways. So, your strategy is essentially to connect with people, right? And to do that through providing things that you think will be valuable. Now, I want to point out that you're not just providing anything that you think is valuable, right? You're doing it within some type of context. I mean, I assume, if you found a story that said there really is a Santa Claus and you thought that was interesting, you're probably not going to share that on your social media, at least the way you just described how you want to use it, because it's really not relevant. You have put some type of context, some type of topic or subject matter around what you're going to share. Why? Well, because that affects who you're going to attract. Now, as you described with your social media, you're not only thinking about the direct customers or potential customers that you may attract, but also the network effect. Whether you're thinking about direct customers or networking, as you suggested, I still think it comes down to having a strategy. Now, for me, I think a strategy, the more narrow focused a strategy, the easier it is to execute. Now, you've been doing social media for a while, and that's one thing that I'll point out is, first, you just need to have a strategy and start executing on it. But then pay attention to what's working and adjust your strategy as you go. I think you've done this. I know I've done this. Like, for example, and maybe this is where we can get more specific into it, but for example, I'll pick Twitter. The way I've used Twitter for a long time, and I'm not doing it right now just because my show is on a pause, but in the past, the main way I've used the Art of Value Twitter account is to promote the podcast. My goal there was centered around the podcast. Number one, it was to attract new listeners by promoting the new episodes we were recording and sharing quotes and sound bites from previous episodes. The second thing was I actually wanted to use it as a way to connect with future guests. And I found that that was helpful. One of the reasons reaching out on Twitter worked for me is because when I do, one of the first things that someone who's not already interacting with me on Twitter, they would look at my feed. Well, if they see that I've been promoting things around the show, that's going to help support the fact that I may be reaching out to them and say, hey, I read your book. Hey, I read your blog. Hey, I'd like to have you on the show or something like that. So that was kind of how I was using that. What's one of your platforms, if you will, that you really enjoy and how have you made specific decisions to use that platform? In other words, kind of explain your strategy.
Yeah, sure. So my primary platform that I started with, because it was a natural extension of what I do already, was YouTube. And, you know, to me, posting videos on YouTube, it's one level of enjoyment and satisfaction. But then reading the comments, to me, it's what makes the whole thing worth it. Where, you know, I get two really important pieces of insight from the comments. One is I may be on the right track and covering what people want to see. So if we get positive comments about, you know, what the videos are, that helps me gauge that. People give me feedback about audio quality, speed. I mean, it's funny, people don't have any filters. They say, oh, this was too fast, too slow, too long, too short. I wish you had a part two. So that gives you tons of insight about how to just become a better information delivery machine, right? By knowing what the crowd who's watching you perceives. Okay, so that's one thing. Two, people usually tell you what else they want to see. You ask, hey, what else would you like to see? Why didn't I cover? What else would you like to learn? And people would also tell you those topics. And then what's really cool about building a pretty large followership, almost 25,000 followers, is that you get a good gauge for how small business owners feel about using QuickBooks, which is my area of expertise. So when I go work with my clients and do, you know, paid consulting, I'm sort of one step ahead of the game. I already have feedback from my network about what they like, what they don't like. So when I walk in to a brand new industry that maybe I've never served ever before, but I had one person comment something, asking a question, because I always welcome people to ask questions, I already done my research and I walk into an appointment already with a little bit under my belt, having zero experience dealing with that industry. So that's why I use YouTube, because it has that comment section. I mean, without the comment section, it would be like just talking into the ether. And that would be, and I guess you could do that too. I mean, I assume some people do that. You know, authors do that, right? When somebody writes a book and sells it, authors don't get feedback on their books, at least the way social media works. I guess they could get feedback. Maybe they send them letters or whatever, but they don't get that immediate feedback. So authors have a different way of working. But, you know, people like us that are working on digital space, that are doing podcasts, are doing Facebook Live and doing YouTube, we get that immediate feedback. And I believe that to be one of the most valuable pieces. And the other thing about it is when we go live, I go live on YouTube and go live on Facebook. It is quite possible that somebody's comment, if I'm listening and watching, shifts the actual conversation. It actually moves that content in a different direction. Like I've had people say, I can't see your face, and I literally step out into the light and keep talking, something I would not have done if I wasn't getting that feedback. So social media, you know, things like Twitter and blog articles, that usually takes a lot longer to get a response. But when you do video live, YouTube or Facebook, you get that immediate response. And an advisory, which is what we advocate here, it's one-to-one FaceTime. That's what advisory is sitting with a person shoulder to shoulder and say, walk me through your problem. Let's see if I can provide some outsiders, different point of view, and some insight with my experience and expertise that may be possibly help you solve that problem. And what is a better way to provide a preview to your capacity to serve someone than doing a video or in YouTube or Facebook? So I would say YouTube number one, absolutely. I wouldn't give it up for anything. And now Facebook Live number two. Those are my two prefer choices to deliver content. Now, as a consumer of content or as a user of content, my favorite is a podcast. But you know, because I happen to be an auditory learner, and I've learned through the times, because I prefer podcasts, that that even though I'm in the video business, the audio portion is more important than the video, because some folks actually watch my YouTube videos in the car and they're just listening. And I've had people tell me, look, I just listen to your videos in the background. And if you say something that I like, I stop and then I look at the screen and say, let me see what he was talking about. Oh, okay. So you have to understand that also, that your audience, who may not necessarily be buying from you, they're just consuming your content. They just love what you got to share, or love what you're curating. They may just be unattentively listening to the whole thing and just waiting for the one or the two things that they can connect with. So, learning that since video and audio is my medium, I had focused more on audio, making sure I have good equipment, good microphones, and they're not expensive. But those are my two favorite to produce in, YouTube, Facebook, and my favorite to consume is podcast. How about yourself?
I'll answer your question, but first a comment or an observation. And I think this is something that easily happens once you set a strategy and you start executing on it. But I think there's two things. There is creating content. So there's educational marketing, essentially. And then there's social media. Those two things are related because, number one, as you're creating content, whether it is written, audio like podcasts, or video such as YouTube videos, you're going to wind up sharing those over social media. You're also going to wind up sharing other people's content over social media. So there's the link between the two, but they're not necessarily the same thing. But that is how you've chosen to use YouTube. And YouTube is very much a content-driven platform. You know, I used the term earlier, micro-content. So when I think about micro-content, and of course, this is no longer the limitation, but on Twitter, originally it was 140 characters. And it's now much higher, and I forget what it is. It's interesting for me. I've gotten trained by Twitter to just use 140 characters. Even though it's no longer the limitation, I still try to use those short, kind of pithy micro content type of things. So just an observation, those are two different things, but they are related primarily because of the sharing factor. As far as for me, for a while I ran two Twitter accounts, one for each of my businesses. And I found that was a challenge. Because typically I was always promoting one or promoting the other, but I had trouble, you know, keeping both going at the same time. I think, you know, and I'll talk in a minute about how I think that can be done well, but that was a challenge for me. So Twitter's really been the one that I've used in the past, and kind of what got me thinking on this topic was just the idea that I was really thinking about how I use Facebook. And I've been observing how other people use Facebook. For example, I've been observing how you do it, but I've also been observing how some others do it. Some people use it, a majority of people, I think, just use it just to connect socially. It's just a casual social network. There's other people that are very intentional about using Facebook for business. One of the things that I've thought about is, well, can I use it for personal and business? And I've just found that at least for me, that doesn't work. For a few people, maybe it does, but I think for the most part, I think you've kind of got to dedicate it to one or the other. And that's what got me thinking about it. But as far as, you know, social media right now, really Twitter has been the one that I've executed on. And I guess right now I couldn't say that there's one I'm using at this specific moment, because one of the things that prompted me to suggest this as a topic is the fact that I'm reconsidering my strategy. And part of what I'm doing is I'm going, okay, not only what platforms do I want to use, how do I want to use each one? And in this case, Facebook's really the one that I'm giving thought to. And I haven't made a firm decision yet, but those are some of the various things that are going through my mind. How do I want to use them? Am I going to use it for just personal? Am I going to use it for just business? Again, I said, I think using both is a challenge, although I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, what platforms, et cetera. So any reaction to any of that? I have a follow-up question for you, but I want to give you a chance to comment on any of that.
Yeah, I like the fact that you mentioned character count. So character count is interesting, and Twitter kind of revolutionized this with 140 character count. Now they're at 280 characters. So it allows the president to be more eloquent in Twitter now. But yeah, it was a limit of 140 characters, and they expanded it to 280. And Snapchat, which got really popular, had a character count of 31. I believe they went from 31 to 80 characters. And Instagram, I don't remember what it was before Facebook took over, but I think Instagram was at 256. So you have all this new media, Snapchat, Twitter, and Instagram, that really gained space. They gained ground by essentially limiting the number of characters that people can publish. You know, now that these have become much bigger platforms, they can expand their character count. But I would argue that it's highly likely that their claim to fame, or the reason why they grew the way they grew, it's because of the limitation of character count. So, and something quasi interesting about that is the character count version of that in the audio world would be obviously short podcasts. And there's a new social media, a relatively new social media platform called Anchor, ANCHOR.FM. Anchor allows you to create your own podcast, which I believe they're a limit of 5 minute segments. So it's a free platform. You create your own podcast, 5 minute segments. And that's what they're, so now they're trying to own the audio space in short character count. Now YouTube doesn't have a limit. You can have, you know, 2, 3, 10 hour videos. As a matter of fact, there's one video that's playing 24/7, which is the video of that car that Elon Musk sent to space. And you can sit there and just watch the video feed from the car that's orbiting the sun or whatever. So YouTube doesn't really have a limit for that. But I can tell you from my personal experience, I look at my YouTube analytics page all the time, every week, every month. And I'm trying to understand, you know, what's my audience attention span in terms of character count. And they, like I said, the character count version in YouTube would be the length of the video. And in average, my very successful videos, they have an average view time between 6 minutes and 7 minutes. So my content, my followers, the stuff that I work on, the ideal length is 6 to 7 minutes. So by learning that, then I know that I have to try to, my content is complex. It takes 2 hours to explain something in depth of the type of stuff that I do with inventory or QuickBooks data import or bank feeds or whatever. So my strategy is to cater to that community that in that 6 to 7 minute attention span is to create videos of that size. Now I won't stop, and I will still create long videos, 1 hour, 2 hour videos, because that's what I like to do. I like to have comprehensive stuff. And that's part of my brand. My brand is I'm comprehensive. It is part of what I do, right? People come to me and say, hey, could you surmise your work in one word? I would say it's comprehensive. That means I've done my research. I have experience. I will tell you the in and outs, if and buts, general rule, exceptions. That's my style. And yes, it takes longer to do that. But I tend to think that I bring tons of value and I can price it accordingly. But I have a dual strategy with that. I'll continue to promote my brand as a comprehensive content developer by doing the long videos. But in terms of the marketing strategy to be able to attract more followers, I have to have those quick hit videos that are 6 to 7 minutes long. So that's something that I learned about that. And that's the only thing I really wanted to comment. But to add to something you said earlier, which, you know, it's about being niche and being narrow and focusing on just one topic and deep diving into that one topic. You know, when you deal with a short attention span, like 31 characters or 140 characters, it's hard to add context to any statement that you make. So for example, if I have a set of followers and they all happen to be QuickBooks Pro Advisors, people that work in QuickBooks, I can post a picture of maybe an error message in QuickBooks, and within 30 characters, I can say, welcome to my Friday, right? And that could have tons of likes because there's a lot of context around it, right? The people that follow that understand, and I don't need to write so much wording. Whereas if I was trying to have mass appeal and I'm trying to appeal to every single person out there, I would have to explain the context behind QuickBooks error messages and something else before the picture even makes sense to anyone. And half the times people halfway reading through it, they're like, well, I don't understand where he's going with this. So when you go narrow and narrow and narrow, you can actually say less words. You can write less words or say less words, but essentially you can say more. You know, think about, I'll give you an example that's relative to today's political atmosphere. The word fake news, or the two words fake news, not in the literal meaning, on everything that surrounds it, has so much context. Like you can sit there in a group of people that are like-minded, whether it's left side or right side, whatever the politics you are, and something can happen and you can say fake news and that's all you can say. And that could be hilarious. And there's no context. The context is the narrow topic that you're dealing with and the people that understand what you're saying around it. So, you know, and I wanted to bring that up because that's just, there are so many things like that in sort of social settings in which you don't have to say a lot and people will understand it. So I think that's the concept behind going narrow and some of these platforms that are in essence narrow on the amount of characters you can bring, because it is assuming that the people that are following you understand the context around it and you don't have to write it in so many words. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right. The reason 140 characters can resonate on Twitter is because you are attracting a certain audience. Now, you're going to attract an audience, hopefully, whether you have a strategy or not. The difference is, without a strategy, you don't even know what you're going to attract, or you're just, you know, going to throw stuff on the wall, see if it sticks, and then see who's out there, right? So I thought it might be helpful to back up and let's just kind of go through, and this is a brainstorm between you and I of, you know, what does it take, or what's the sequence to come up with a strategy? So I'm going to kind of throw out some initial questions and try to get these in order. And I'd love for us to kind of collaborate on this. But, you know, my first thought was, well, first you have to have a target audience. You have to have a niche, or you have to have a specialization that you're going after. I'd say second, you have to know what is the message you want to communicate to that audience. Third, you need to decide what are the social media platforms that you want to use. And then fourth, once you have those three things, who's the audience, what's the message, and what's the platform, then you can begin to craft a strategy for that platform. And you may decide to pick three platforms and use a similar strategy across all three, or you may decide to pick three and use a slightly different strategy for each, or possibly even two fairly different ones. Now, the nature of the platform, as we've talked about, whether it's a limitation of characters or it's primarily video or et cetera, is going to dictate that. But those are the initial three questions that I would think you would need to answer as you're starting to come up with your strategy. What other questions would you add to this?
Yeah, I would say that. So let's recap. So who's your audience? What's the message? And what's the platform? Right? Those were the first three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the fourth one I would add is how am I going to create value so my network multiplies? That would be my fourth one, right? So whether it is a value to my target audience that's on the first degree, or my target audience that could be at that 6th degree, as we spoke earlier. So how am I going to create value so my audience multiplies? And the fifth one would be, what will be the call to action? So what will you tell your audience to do after you deliver the content? So I think that if we take those three that you gave, which I think they're the perfect starting point, and then add that fourth one and the fifth one, which you can evolve to, it's okay. Like, you don't have to have them all right. And these things could evolve, could change. There's no rule. Like, Kirk and I just came up with this on the fly. There's no rule. There could be a sixth one. We could combine two into one. But I think that if you have those five, set, or at least you have you targeted yourself to think about these five in a strategic manner, I think you're in a good starting point. Now, one thing I want to mention is that on the third one, you know, what is the platform? I think it could be platform or medium, right? Because not all social media has to be a digital, like not all social media has to be a digital platform. Okay. So for example, I used to go to some networking meetings. I went to a couple of BNI meetings. I went to a couple of Toastmaster meetings. I went to a couple of Chamber of Commerce meetings. I go to conferences. I mean, part of my social media is connecting with people there, adding value to people there, you know, letting people know who I am and being interested in what they do. So the platform could, which again, it could, the platform is the medium in which you will communicate that. It doesn't necessarily only have to be digital social media. I think a lot of times, I think the digital social media just creates a backup or a foundation for your face-to-face, because some people are in the type of business that the only way they can acquire a client is with a face-to-face meeting. I mean, that's just for some people, that's the only way they will conduct business, face-to-face meeting. And for some people, digital, web-based, it's 100% okay. But just like, you know, don't get stuck that platform means Facebook or YouTube. Like that's not, it's not just that. And what Kirk said, I think it was, or what you said was key, which is if you're going to go multi-platform, which is okay. And I actually like multi-platform, is your message and your content is the same, but maybe the delivery, you know, the style and the length will be different. You know, I'll give you one really simple one that is that a lot of people just don't realize, and I'll just kind of blow your mind, is when I go live on YouTube, I use my phone horizontally. Why? Because most people watch a video horizontally, like a TV. And when I go live on Facebook, I use my phone vertically, because most people browse up and down in Facebook vertically. So that's something just extremely simple, low-hanging fruit that gives you context around how people consume your content. And there's tons of other ones. Like for example, I'll give you another example. Most Facebook people start watching a video with the volume down or no volume, because the default setting on the phone is if you're browsing up and down and a video starts playing, no audio comes out. You have to actually have to click in it to hear the audio. So that tells you that if you want to attract audience, those first 3 seconds where they watch the visuals have to, you know, completely convey what people are going to get from that video if they do watch a video, or you need to have captions so people see the first couple of words and say, oh, okay, I see what this video it's all about. When YouTube, most people, when they play a video, they're more intentional about it. They searched it, they looked at it, they saw the thumbnail, and then they clicked. So they have a different mindset. So Facebook is more of a like a TV ad type of thing, where you get a real short attention span from the client, from the potential customer, and then maybe if you were impactful on those first 3 to 10 seconds, you can get them to watch your video. Where YouTube is more of a search engine, and people are more intentional about you know, wanting to watch your video. But the other side of the coin is that when people watch YouTube videos, they have an end in mind. They actually have a goal. Anytime that you search something in YouTube or in Google, you are looking for something. You're looking for an answer to something. Okay, and so the level of expectation of quality and delivery and congruence between the title, what the keywords that they searched, the content of your video, your introduction, the length, the context, all that stuff is going to be really highly scrutinized in YouTube. When Facebook, most people are scrolling down and they see what you got, they're not interested today, they'll move along. They don't really tend to scrutinize anything around it. They just move on. So, and people won't befriend you because you have a bad video. But in YouTube, people will unfollow you if they start thinking that their content doesn't relate to them. So I wanted to just add that because I was just thinking about that, what you were talking about, multi-platforms. All that stuff was going through my head because that's stuff that I'm still learning today and I'm still going through and refining my own strategy based on that.
It's interesting to listen to you talk about social media and how you use it, because for you, it is so ingrained in what you do. And I'll, you know, I'll just state fact, right? There's probably about a 10-year difference between you and I. We won't put a first digit on those, at least for me, because I want people to continue to think that I'm younger, good looking of the two of us. But anyway, there's about a 10-year difference. And so, you know, social media is more, I think, accepted and kind of part of what you do because you are the younger of the two of us, whereas I'm a decade later. And so I've just noticed that, although there are some people who, you know, I just laid out a stereotype, and there's some people who totally break that. But what made me think about that is because there's been at least two instances now where we've been talking about social media, and you have linked your social media to something that I would not put in the social media bucket. And I'm not saying you're right and I'm wrong. I'm just saying we think about it different. And so to kind of go back and recap what those are, first of all, you linked your social media to your content creation. And obviously so, because YouTube is a content heavy platform. I mean, I've heard that YouTube is the second most popular search engine on the planet, right? So Google owns number one and number two.
Actually, not only that, I'll tell you something that is endemic and indicative of what you just said. Last summer, we told my daughter, we were thinking about where we're going to go for summer. And sorry to interrupt you, but you're going to like this. And we always go to Disney World, right? We're in Miami, so it's close to Orlando. So we were contemplating doing something different, going to SeaWorld, which, by the way, in our world, that's something different because we done Disney so much. And we tell my daughter, we ask her, hey, you want to go to SeaWorld this year? And she says, what is that? She's like, you know what? I'll search it. And she opened up the iPad that she was playing with. She went to YouTube and she searched SeaWorld in YouTube. Mind you, she knows how to Google. She does that for school. But understand that in her mind, if you're looking to the answer for something, you start with YouTube. And I don't think YouTube is going to be the second most popular search engine in the world for long. I think it will be the most popular search engine in about 10 years. When all four of my kids, which understand YouTube as being the window to the world, not Google, start doing searches, Google will become the second search engine out. I mean, unless Google somehow curtails YouTube from doing so because they own both platforms. But I think that's just very indicative of what you just said. It's not the second search engine in the world because people like to watch videos. It's because it is natural for someone to look for an answer in a video. And the younger you are, as you mentioned, the more you will accept that. My dad bought us an encyclopedia when I was 8. And my dad's a huge source of knowledge. Every time I had a question about something, I asked my dad. And my dad wanted to get his $1,200 worth because somebody sold it to him door to door. Every time I asked him a question, he says, you know, check the encyclopedia. He actually instilled in our grains that you have to go check the encyclopedia to find answers. You know, nowadays, I don't think any of my kids know what an encyclopedia is. They will say Wikipedia, you know. So, you know, and again, it's natural. Like, why would you need an encyclopedia that's outdated? Because I remember we used to get yearly updates, to the encyclopedia. We did it for like 12 years. So, and even now, searching words is just, and it's sad because, you know, reading is an extremely important part of everybody's discipline. It's sad in that perspective. But it's also very encouraging because anyone can make a video with a smartphone device, where not everyone can necessarily write a book. So it actually does give almost everyone an amplified voice. So I interrupted you. So I wanted to comment that about YouTube.
No worries. So I mentioned that you had linked, you know, creating content, educational content, and social media. The other thing you had linked was networking and social media. And those two things are related, but in my mind, I want to separate them out simply because, for example, I see social media when I'm heading up to a conference, I begin to implement a social media strategy specifically for that conference. For example, I may make a list on Twitter of the speakers at the conference, and I then may reach out over a period of time individually to each one, or maybe not all of them, but the ones I want to connect with, the ones who have topics that are similar to mine, or the ones who I want to get to know because I feel like there may be some synergy or something. I will also do that. I've also done this where I will try to identify people in my network or my audience that I want to connect with. And so I'll begin to reach out and connect with them on social media. You can also do that with prominent members of the community who may or may not be a part of your audience and use that as a strategy. So I've just given kind of three, what I would call micro strategies you can use approaching the conference. And, you know, by the way, there are some big conferences coming, you know, in the accounting bookkeeping space. There's one in June, another in August, another in November. So there's three opportunities for the audience to implement those. But just some ideas of how social media does relate to those two areas and how you can use it as a strategy in reaching out and making it a tool with some micro strategies to help with those particular kind of things. So there's more we could say on this topic of social media, but I just kind of want to close it, give you a couple of minutes. I want to throw out kind of this kind of a, you know, out of left field, but it's a question I thought of a while ago that I want to hear your feedback on. And I guess it's kind of two part. One, do you use Instagram? And if so, how do you use Instagram?
I'm not a good example for this because I don't use it. I don't have anything against it. We do have an Instagram account, and we have a person in our office that takes pictures of the team members and different activities that they do, and they post that into Instagram. So we made Instagram the platform in which our team celebrates and shares what they do. And I, as the leader, I don't touch it. I don't do anything with it. Sometimes a picture of me, it's in there, but, and then I chose to use Twitter myself. So I think Twitter is more of a personal voice, type of platform, and Instagram is more of a visual, type of platform. So I'm not an expert in Instagram. We probably could bring an expert of Instagram to the show and pick their brains about it. And I really like the fact that we brought this topic up. I think this is a great part one to social media. I think social media, when you kind of think about it in depth, has so much effect in our business lives as advisors and accountants and consultants. And I think there's actually a lot more to it. So I think this is a perfect part one, Kirk. Thank you for setting it up. And then we'll surely bring another a social media topic to the table in another week. Until then, Kirk, I'll see you next week.
See you, Hector.